This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I'll let everyone read through the rules. So again, welcome to all of our committee members. I'm gonna ask for us to start the roll call to check our essay members.
Yep. Layla Abdelmajid.
Excused.
Dylan Ondicott.
Unexcused.
Morgan Baker. Genevieve, pardon?
Sorry, I think she's here. I saw her name, right?
Yes, I see her actually. Genevieve Bensa. Is she also in chat or?
No, so that's gonna be late unless she shows up. So for now, unexcused.
Katrina Bentley. Oh, Katarina Bentley, sorry.
Here.
Kayla Butler.
Present.
Carla Castillo.
Excused.
Uche Chukwukere.
Here.
Lucy Contreras.
Here.
Annette Lieberman.
Yeah.
Sonu Kapoor.
Present.
Mari Lampert.
Present.
Savannah Lim.
Here.
Andrea Miramontes Serrano.
Here.
Evan Moy.
Here.
Estefina Perez.
Here, it's 7 a.m.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Here.
Mardias Sharda.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Here.
Claire Templeman.
Here.
Valeria Valencia.
Here.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Salam Moldai.
Here.
Valentina Xu.
Present.
Johan Yan.
Here.
Raquel Zohar.
Here.
Lucas Zupano.
Unexcused.
Samuel Zavirev.
Here. I didn't hear my name, but I'm here.
Oh, right, Tomas, sorry.
Thanks, Casey.
Yeah, my best. Okay, got you.
Great, thank you, Casey. What is the member count?
One, two, three. 25, so definitely quorum.
Thank you. Morgan was counted, right? She just messaged me to let me know that her audio is not working. Okay. Perfect. Thank you, Casey. Okay, so we have 25 members present. The time is 4:52. I'm calling the meeting to order. Let me stop sharing screen. So has everyone gotten a chance to look through the rules? Okay, cool. Again, welcome to all of our committee members. Just be respectful of our meeting rules. We have a very specific procedures that we follow. So if something doesn't make sense, feel free to message me to ask. Okay, so did the call to order, have attendance. I'm gonna move forward on our agenda with the land acknowledgement. So Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayogono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayogono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayogono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayogono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right, thanks everyone. Continuing with our agenda, we're gonna move straight into announcements and presentations. EVP Watson, you have the floor, and I believe we have a presentation.
Yes, thank you, Kat. So first on our agenda under announcements, we have the student advocate, Annalie. And we also have the Title IX coordinator, Laura Ruggles. So I'm going to hand it off to them.
Hi, everyone. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Annalie Nanye. I'm undergraduate student advocate, and I'm representing Student Assembly this year for Title IX's Policy 6.4 Stakeholder Review Board. Today, we have a presentation from Laura Ruggles. She's the Associate Vice President of the Office of Institutional Equity in Title IX and the Title IX Coordinator for the University. And so I'll give it to her.
Thank you. Thanks, Annalie. And thank you all very much for this time on your agenda. It's really important that we tell you about what's going on and most importantly, hear back from you. So I do have a few slides, and if it's okay, I'll go ahead and share those with you now. Is everyone able to see those? Yeah, good. Well, again, thanks. And Annalie is an important member of this group, which we formed this fall because Policy 6.4, which is your university policy addressing prohibited bias, discrimination, harassment, and sexual and related misconduct, is in an interim status. And the reason it's in an interim status is because changes were made this summer due to the Title IX regulations. We had just a few short months over the summer when people were scattered across the globe to make these changes, most of which are required as a matter of law now to comply with the Title IX regulations. Those regulations apply specifically to sexual harassment as defined in the regulations, and sexual harassment as it relates to students as well as employees, faculty and staff. So to really kind of understand more about what we have done, we felt it was necessary to share more about the regulations. So if you'll bear with me, I'll try to work through this as quickly as possible. It can get a little bit complicated, but you're a group that's used to dealing with complex issues. So this is how sexual harassment is defined in the regulations on the left of your screen. So different types of behaviors. And then if all of the jurisdictional conditions, so 1 through 4 on the right of your screen, are met, the Title IX regulatory framework and these requirements apply to that case. So you got to have one of the definitions and all of those jurisdictional conditions. And that's when the regulatory framework as a matter of law applies. We'll come back to that. So I'll give you just a minute to read that. So the regulations have a number of requirements for what they call the grievance process. We might call that the hearing process here at Cornell. And they include, for example, live real-time cross-examination as part of the hearing panel process, which is now conducted by a party's advisor. And so what the university decided to do over the summer to meet these legal requirements is create 2 hearing panel processes for student cases. So this is when a student is accused of the misconduct. One is called Hearing Panel Process A, and so you'll see that a few rows down in this chart. And that's the hearing panel process that incorporates this new cross-examination requirement. Right below it, Hearing Panel Process B is the hearing panel process that we had here at Cornell before these Title IX regulations were in existence. And there is a form of cross-examination that's included in that process. It's a written submission of cross-examination by the parties to the hearing panel. The hearing chair makes a decision about whether that cross-examination can be asked. So these cases, A and the B cases, are separated in this way. If the Title IX regulatory framework, which we just went through, applies, or even if it doesn't apply, suspension or dismissal is a potential sanction for the charged misconduct, hearing panel process A with that live real-time cross-examination conducted orally, that's the process that's going to be used for that case. If that Title IX regulatory framework doesn't apply, and suspension or dismissal is not a potential sanction, then the hearing panel process that we've had here at Cornell for some time will be used, and that's that written cross-examination process. I'm happy to talk about the employee procedures as well, if that makes sense to spend any time doing. Maybe we can come back to that at the end just to make sure we get through all the slides and there's opportunity for comment and question. So I'll keep moving. So as we mentioned, Annalee is part of the stakeholder review group, and our purpose is to review the changes that have been made to the policy to comply with the regulations. And there's another change that we'll talk with you about that wasn't required by the regulations, but the university did make a change. And we will be gathering input, which is the reason we're with you tonight, to give to the policy executives for their consideration as the policy is finalized and move from interim status to final status. Within this group, we have representatives from each of the assemblies, as well as the Tech campus and the Weill Medical campus. And the group has been meeting every 2 weeks. I think we have our fourth meeting coming up next week, and we'll be preparing that report for the policy executives to reflect as all of the input that we have received about the policy to date. And then the next steps beyond that will be to within the university's policy process to go to the policy advisory group, and then beyond that, the executive policy review group. Here are the discussion items that have been identified through the stakeholder review group. First, the evidentiary standard. And for those of you who have been following the developments under the campus code of conduct, you'll know that this has been a big topic of discussion there. And one of the questions that came up during our time at the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly is whether the standard of conduct under the, a standard of evidence, pardon me, under the code of conduct can be different than the standard of evidence under policy 6.4. And the answer to that is yes. As long as under policy 6.4, for all sexual harassment cases, whether it's a student, faculty, or staff case, we use the same evidentiary standard. We do have a choice, however, and it can be preponderance of the evidence, which is more likely than not, so anything greater than 50%, or it can be the clear and convincing evidence standard, and that's a higher standard. It's a greater probability. Right now, it remains preponderance of the evidence. That's the standard that it was previously. So there's been no change as a result of the regulations. And that is the standard of evidence that's applied in court for discrimination cases. And it's the standard of evidence that we use for all types of discrimination cases here under policy 6.4, not just sexual harassment cases. The other change, or something that actually was changed in the policy this summer, and this may be an important one, it was not required by the regulations, but the regulations clarified that it wasn't necessary that all employees be designated as mandatory reporters. So you may be aware that up until August 14th, when these changes took effect, any employee who wasn't confidential was under an obligation to report information about student office. That is no longer the case. We've narrowed the group of employees. Can you all still hear me? I'm getting a message that my internet connection is unstable.
You're back now.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. I hope you didn't miss too much. But in any event, so we might have a smaller group of designated reporter employees who are under that mandatory reporting obligation. So a change from that broad duty to consult. And what that means is, for example, if you wanted to talk with a faculty member, that faculty member will not automatically be required to share with our office what you share with them. We hope the response will be, first, do you want to report this yourself? Do you want me to report it? And here are all the resources that are available at the university. The reason this change was made, and I think it's always important to understand when changes are made, why that is the case, is because the research has shown that when you have these vast mandatory reporting systems where all employees have to report, it creates institutional distrust, and people are less likely to come forward and participate in the process. a system that gives them the agency to do that on their own as much as possible, in contrast, creates much more trust in the system. And because of the new requirements around cross-examination, if someone does not want to move forward with the case, in all likelihood, it won't be possible for the university to move forward without their cooperation, because they will have to submit to cross-examination. Other things that have been identified through the stakeholder review group, on a positive note, the Title IX regulations have underscored that alternate resolution is absolutely available as the university determines appropriate to resolve reports and cases. There are certain cases that cannot be resolved through informal resolution. And to clarify this, alternate resolution means not an investigation, not a hearing panel. It's essentially a negotiation between the parties with the Title IX office about terms and conditions to resolve the matter. Informal alternate resolution means there isn't an acceptance of a policy violation. Formal alternate resolution includes an acceptance of a policy violation finding. Lastly, we've already touched upon the oral cross-examination that now is embedded into the procedures to comply with the Title IX requirements. And then in addition, some members of the review group would like to see the bias process spelled out a little bit more clearly, whether that's in the procedures themselves or through some other communications and guidelines, and the protected statuses. So gender, disability, religion, to see those defined actually in the policy and procedures. So these are the items that the review group has identified, and by no means are they meant to constrain what you can offer input around. It's just to let you know what has been identified as a result of the changes to the policy. So what we are asking for this evening is as much feedback as you are willing and comfortable providing. You can do that, I guess, in the course of the discussion this evening, to the extent that's allowed by your rules. And if you can't, or you need some time to think about it, here is how you can reach us. And we ask that you please email your input. And I realize this is a quick turnaround, but by December 8th, so that it can be fully considered as we move forward with the next steps in this process. If any of this you need a refresher on, you can go to our website, which is title9.cornell.edu. And at the top of the page there, you will see a recap of all of this information. Okay, thank you so much for your time. And Annalie, was there anything I missed or anything you wanted to add?
No, I think you covered most of it. I think we can yield to Kat for any questions.
Awesome. Okay. Laura, thank you so much for that great presentation. We really appreciate it. And also, I know you just came to Cornell, I guess, earlier this year. So welcome. We're so happy to have you on board. Yeah. I'm now going to ask if any members have any questions. If you do have a question for Laura or would like to provide any quick comments, feel free to raise your hand in the chat. If not, then we can also just move on. I did have one quick question myself, but I'll wait until anyone raises their hand to ask. No questions? Okay, just a quick question. Do we have any idea of how long this interim period will last? Is it assuming the new administration will roll back these new Title IX regulations that came about over the summer, or is it still unclear?
Good question. So the interim status is a result of the university's policy process. And typically that should be 6 months or less. So these changes went into effect as required under the regulations August 14th. So we have until about mid-February. Now that can be extended as needed, but we anticipate that we will, by February 22nd, be at the executive policy review group. So we'll be right around that 6 month mark. If the administration, the new administration, decides to roll back the regulations, what we're hearing is that won't be sort of their first priority, although President-elect Biden has committed to doing that, it will take some time. And so when that happens, we will need to revisit as a university whether the requirements that were imposed by the regulations, which at that point maybe would be rolled back, should continue to be reflected in the procedures or should be removed from the procedures. So I expect that we will finalize this, and then when that happens, if when that happens, we'll bring all of this back around. And that's, I think, not unusual for policy 6.4. What I understand is these procedures are regularly reviewed here at Cornell, and changes are made, whether they're big changes or small changes, on a fairly regular basis. So what I think is important is when that is happening, we're able to connect with groups like the Student Assembly, let you know what's going on, and get as much input as we can.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that answer, Laura.
So we may be asking to get back on the agenda when that happens.
You're always welcome. So now, Representative Reuning, the floor is yours. The question.
Hey, I just had a quick question about the change in mandatory reporters. So people like RAs would still be mandatory reporters with change anyways. Okay. That was just my only question. Thank you.
And hi, I remember you from, I think, one of the first meetings that I had. It's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again.
So there is a list that's connected to the policy, and RAs are identified as designated reporters. And that's given how critical that role is in getting information up through the chain. And also because of unique requirements in the res halls. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Thank you, Tomas, for the question. Thank you, Laura, for answering. Do we have any more questions? All right, seeing as we have no more questions, Laura, thank you so much for being here. On behalf of the Student Assembly, we really appreciate you taking the time to be here. And again, if you want to put the email account that people can contact you with in the chat, feel free to go ahead and do that. Great. Just a quick note for everyone. We just turned on closed captioning for accessibility reasons. We're going to try to keep doing this in the future. Zoom is tricky, but we're figuring it out. Okay. So again, thank you, Laura. Moving forward with the agenda, back to EVP Watson for announcements.
Thank you, Kat, and thank you, Laura, and thank you, Annalie. So next on our announcements, we have an announcement from our Dyson representative, Mardia Chardot.
Yes, Mardia Chardot. Hi, everyone. I've actually asked and I wasn't put me on the agenda. Was it Tuesday or something? But I just came across some key information. I just wanted to say one of my initiatives for this semester and also next semester is try to bring gender neutral bathroom to Waring Hall. And we figured out that this actually is a gender neutral bathroom in Waring Hall. However, people don't know about it. And although it's on the map, the sign on the bathroom just says restroom and people aren't sure. And right now I'm just gonna focus on changing the signage so people, because it's important for people to feel acknowledged and included. And so they can have a sense of belonging and that there's a place for them. I was gonna ask for any sort of help with other SA members, but since I just realized that we already have one and we just need to work on the signage, I don't need that much help. However, if anyone's interested and wants to help me out, just send me a DM through Slack and hopefully we can get the ball rolling and get this implemented before the start of next semester.
Thank you for sharing, Mardia. If anybody wants to help out with that, feel free to contact her, I guess. And then also moving on, we have an announcement from our Director of Elections, Mariah Adege.
Yeah, I wanted to make an announcement about the way the last meeting went, as well as the atrocities that I've seen happen since the last meeting and this past week. I know that there are people who oppose the resolution who have claimed to be victims of harassment and cyberbullying. I guess the announcement I'd like to make is that people calling you out in mass or individually is not harassment. That is literally what democracy is. When people elect you and you vote in a way that they are not happy with, they should and can hold you accountable and let you know that that is not what they wanted to see happen. If you are not ready to be held accountable for the actions that you make on this assembly, you should not be here. You should not be serving on the SA if you are not ready to understand that your actions have consequences. Furthermore, the villain self-victimization of the opposition is not only rude, but it's also insensitive in the face of the villainization of many of the organizers of the resolution, namely Uche, who has been cyberbullied and harassed aggressively in this past week. That is completely unacceptable and out of line. Whether you as SA members who oppose this resolution did that as individuals, or whether it was people who support you in your vote, speak up and say that what is happening is wrong. These attacks are racist, they are homophobic, this is anti-Black discrimination, and it should not be happening. And you all know that. And as elected representatives, I'm looking to you to hold your constituents accountable. Speak up and say something in defense of Uche, because you know what's going on is wrong. I will not be taking questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mariah. And next on the agenda, we have an announcement from the Dining Committee Chair, Brian Weintraub.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I just want to preface, Uche has done more for this campus than nearly anybody else I know. Like, don't come at him. He's fantastic. Like, and so is everybody else that did this. Like, they're amazing. Like, really, they deserve all the respect and even more past that. On a completely separate note, so I'm the dining chair. I was on the student assembly for a while, but this year I'm not. I'm just working with the dining committee. I know people have been a little bit less than thrilled with the food at Cornell Dining this year. And so we wanted to sort of acknowledge the fact that like this has been heard, and like we are making a lot of changes for the spring. I don't have time to go into all of them now. And like there's a lot of detail on it, but if this is something that you're interested in hearing about what the changes for Cornell Dining are gonna be for the spring, please let me know. We have a meeting with the Cornell Dining leadership team next Tuesday. This is December 8th. 5 to 6 p.m. Dining is going to be going through a bunch of updates, stuff like menu planning, stuff like sustainability, nutrition, operating hours for the spring, all of this great stuff. Just that way you can get a sense of like what's going to be happening for the spring. Like people know that the food has not been great, changes are on the way, and hopefully it should be a little bit more like the typical Cornell Dining experience for those of us that have had that in the past. And then for, you know, first year students or transfer students that are new to Cornell, you know, hopefully you will get, you know, what you've heard to be the great Cornell Dining experience. So if you want to come to that meeting, please do reach out to me. My net ID is BAW245, which I'm going to put in the chat. And then also I'm sure you could reach out to anyone on SA and they could give you my contact info as well. So next Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m., please do let me know if you want to come. Thanks, everybody.
And thank you, Brian. Next on our agenda, we have Lucas Smith with an announcement.
Yeah, and I'll speak briefly because I this is regarding Annabelle's grocery, and I think I saw that there might be some people actually in the class that are on, so I'll feel free to yield to them if they're willing to speak, but I'll just start. I'm putting a link in the chat to essentially a Google form that Annabelle's grocery has been putting out to collect responses about, I guess, food insecurity and just, you know, how has access to food been on campus. So I think that segues well with Brian's point. If anybody else is from Annabelle's is here and wants to talk about it, please feel free to jump in now, but otherwise fill out the survey and give your thoughts for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. And then finally on the announcements agenda portion of the agenda, we have Andrea Serrano?
Yeah. Okay. Did you want to say something? Sorry.
Nope. You can.
Okay. No, I just wanted to announce off of what Brian said, the little changes in dining that we have been making throughout the semester. So I have contacted the Office of Dining several times throughout the semester, and we've managed to, I don't know if you guys noticed, but at the end of the semester, we managed to change the salad plastic Tupperware to cardboard, which is an incredible move because that was taking up a lot of our plastic waste. And we also managed to get more diversity and variety in the different dining halls throughout the campus, potentially moving that, like improving that system in spring semester. Cornell Dining will have a meeting this Tuesday, like Brian said. So more information will be provided on that next meeting, if anything. But variety is already being put forward. There has also been a lot of petitions for more vegan options, and that is something that dining is currently working on. More implementing more vegetables is also in the plan. And if you guys, if any of you have like any specific recommendations, please feel free to private message me and anything, because I will be representing students in the meeting on Tuesday. So we're open for any suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Seeing that we have no more announcements, I'm gonna move on to the next item on our agenda, which is open microphone. So if any members of the community would wish to speak right now about things that are not on our agenda, please raise your hand and I will unmute you. Okay, UA Rep Logan Kennedy. Kenny, sorry.
Hey there, thanks Noah, and Kenny, yeah. Hi everyone, for those of you that don't know me, my name's Logan Kenny, I'm a third year law student, third year on the University Assembly as well, and also University Assembly Chair this year. I just wanted to quickly talk and let everybody know that the Board of Trustees will be voting on the Code of Conduct on December 10th at a special meeting. And I've looked through the Student Assembly meeting minutes and I've noticed that the code hasn't really been discussed this year or this academic year, not much since May. So I just wanted to urge, if possible, that the discussion of jurisdiction comes up today, because on the table is taking jurisdiction away from the University Assembly and moving it to Ryan Lombardi or someone in his position. So the Vice President of Student and Campus Life. I'm sorry if I have that mixed up in my head. I just have the letters. So I'm just, I didn't realize that I could have messaged Noah ahead of time to be a presenter. So I'm sorry for taking up open mic. I tried to get someone to co-sponsor a resolution with me and I wasn't able to, but if I just really urge that we talk about jurisdiction if possible, just to see where the Student Assembly is at, because I would not want the UA to make any sort of decision or recommendation without input. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Logan. Next, we have Evan.
I apologize for not formally putting issues with the Student Code of Conduct on the agenda, but I was only made aware of this Tuesday after midnight, so it was past the deadline. The Board of Trustees will vote, as Logan was saying, on new changes to the Code of Conduct next Friday. And there are sweeping changes to the judicial process, and this will affect Cornell students for generations. The new code was allegedly written in full by this assembly last semester and passed with little debate in April of this year. If you're wondering, it's Resolution 65. This resolution is very unorthodox for the Student Code of Conduct, because traditionally changes are proposed and handled by the Codes and Judiciary Committee, which is part of the University Assembly. But in my correspondences with the University Assembly, it has come out that this resolution, Resolution 65, was not written by the Assembly as is often stated, but rather a university council, most likely. And so in this way, the resolution was used to subvert the authority of the CJC, and we should not erode this institution of shared governance and be rubber stamped at the convenience of the administration. I motion now to amend the agenda to include two new resolutions. I would have got them in before the Tuesday night deadline had I known. I have committee approval for these resolutions, so I'm going to send them over to the EVP right now.
Second the motion to amend the agenda.
Okay. Is our parliamentarian here? I don't know if we're allowed to make motions during open microphone.
Yeah, I'm here. Kat, do you have any input? I'm not entirely sure. I can start looking though.
Thanks, Michael. And thank you, Logan and Evan, for bringing this. Gina, correct me if I'm wrong. I think traditionally you would want to hold a motion until after open microphone, which should end promptly after we finish our speakers list on open mic. Once open mic is finished, you're more than welcome to make that a motion to amend the agenda. Gina, are you there?
You've got it right.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Sounds good. So Evan, do you withdraw your motion so that you can re-motion immediately after we finish open mic?
I temporarily withdraw my motion.
Okay, thank you, Evan. Let's continue with open mic, finish that off, and then we can get back to it.
Okay, so going back into open mic, are there any questions for Evan? Okay, seeing no questions, we're gonna move on to the UA rep, Bennett.
I actually just wanted to provide a point of clarification to what Evan had brought up. Not only was this resolution put forward by university representatives in an effort to subvert university assembly authority, it was actually rejected by the Codes and Judicial Committee when it came to the Codes and Judicial Committee. So the actual body that is in charge of handling alterations to the code rejected this proposal, and it's still being used as a means of showing student support for what they put forward, when in reality the proper bodies and the proper way to go about amending the rejected.
Thanks, Bennett. Could you restate that briefly? I think you kind of cut out for a little bit.
I'm sorry, my Wi-Fi is terrible. Just to, as a point of clarification for what Evan had brought up, the Codes Judicial Committee is the committee that is making amendments to the code. And when Resolution 65 was brought to the Code and Judicial Committee, it was rejected. So it's being used as a means of showing student support for a resolution that the proper channels to go about amending the code rejected. So it is 100% being used as a way to use university assembly's authority on making amendments.
Okay, thank you, Evan. Or Bennett, I'm sorry. Kat Restrepo?
Hi, everyone. I'm Kat, a co-sponsor for SA Resolution 11, calling for the disarmament of CUPD. Fellow organizers recently were made aware that Carlo, who recently made a statement to The Sun calling for a revote, can't make it to the meeting today because of a family emergency. So I'm just going to urge folks who voted no on the resolution to call for a revote on behalf of him, or in light of the current circumstances, as well as constituent members who feel strongly about the revote, to message their SA reps who voted no, so we can have the revote today.
Thank you, Kat. And now I'm gonna hand it back off to Kat Huang, our president, to move on with the agenda.
Okay, thank you, Noah. Okay, so it seems like we had a couple things come up in open mic. And again, Logan, thank you so much for being here. It's great to see your UEH here. Sorry, I know you're about to leave. great to see you here. So we did have an outstanding motion from Evan to amend the agenda to add two resolutions. Evan, have you had a chance to send this to EVP Watson so that he could put it in the box so everyone could view them?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I just put them in the box. I'm gonna share the links in the chat now.
Thank you. And then also I did hear from Kat Restrepo that there is a request for a motion to be made. If anyone is willing to make that motion, go ahead and motion that. But first we're gonna let Evan make his motion. Okay, I see the box link. SA members, community members, feel free to check out the resolutions that are being added. And is it only one resolution, Evan?
There are two resolutions.
Okay, so there's another one, thank you. Cool.
A motion to add these to the agenda.
Okay.
Second the motion.
Second. There's been a second. Okay. SA members, feel free to go ahead and vote in the chat. Only SA voting members can vote. Okay, I'm going to close voting in like 10 seconds. Okay. We have 28 members present, so we're missing at least a few votes. Okay, we're almost there. If you're abstaining, feel free to privately message me. And okay, sorry, only SA members can vote. So if you're not an SA voting member, I'm going to have to not count that. And Noah, could you help with checking all of the votes to make sure they're SA members? Sorry, it's taking forever to look through all the names. I believe the vote count is it 16 to 12 to 1? Because I think someone who's not an SA member cast a vote.
Yeah, that sounds right to me, Kat.
Okay. So we actually have, okay, great. Thank you. 16 to 12 to 1. This motion passes. So these resolutions have been added to the agenda. I think they'll be added at the end. So we do have like past resolutions that we didn't get to last meeting that had been tabled. So these resolutions will be discussed at the end. Great. Thank you, Evan. And thank you, Logan. Going back to Katarina's point that was raised in open microphone, is there a motion to reconsider a previous vote coming from someone who had voted no at this previous meeting? Actually, I'm going to put up a quick PowerPoint on how this is supposed to happen, just so everyone's clear. If there is no motion, then that's cool. We will not be reconsidering the vote. Okay. Take a minute, look at these rules. All right, has everyone gotten a chance to look through these rules? Give me a nod. Okay, I see some nods. I'm gonna stop sharing. As chair, I'm gonna ask if there are any motions on the floor right now. If not, we're gonna continue on. Okay, seeing as there is no motion, we're going to move on. So to make this clear what just happened, community members, if you came here in anticipation of there being a revote of last week's resolution, I think resolution number 11, Carlo Castillo, an SA member, had expressed and given previous notice that he would be motioning to reconsider this vote. Unfortunately, Carlo himself is not here. He's in the hospital, so he can't make that motion. I would encourage you all to return next week where we might be reconsidering the motion then. But again, thank you all for coming still. Great. Moving forward with the agenda, we're going to move to a first resolution that we have, which is resolution number 15, demanding Cornell to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Co-sponsors, the floor is yours. Feel free to present it, and then from there, we'll go. Would it also be helpful if I shared my screen to show what the resolution is?
Yes, please.
Yes, for sure, I can do that. And Salon, go ahead, the floor is yours.
Okay, yeah. So pretty much this resolution, it just states statistics provided about Black life on campus, like what pretty much like Black students' dissatisfaction on Cornell campus, whether or not they feel comfortable or in terms of representation as well. So this resolution starts off by just saying statistics, and then it follows on by talking about different aspects of the systemic racism and the Black Lives Matter movement, especially over the summer, how it got highlighted because of the fact of the protests and the death of George Floyd, and just pretty much the fact that being Black with all this going on, plus with the pandemic, is a lot of stress, and Student Assembly just hasn't really made a stance on it yet, but a lot of different orgs on campus has. So this resolution is pretty much just saying for Student Assembly to stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement, and for Cornell to stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement as well.
Thank you, Salam. Just to clarify, you must be respectful in the chat or else it's going to be disabled, like if I see one more disrespectful message, okay? Wow.
Sorry, Kat, I just wanted to point out the message in the chat also proves my point, being Black on campus and Black Lives Matter movement. It's just further proving my point why Student Assembly needs to take a stance on this, that we need to stand in solidarity with Black students. And how we deserve the same amount of respect as everyone else.
Thank you, Salam. Also to clarify, you may not interrupt another member. You may only speak during a meeting if you're called upon by the chair. Okay. And again, chat will be disabled if any more messages that are not related to procedure or to the student assembly proceedings are sent. Okay. Thank you, Salam, for presenting your resolution. Do any other co-sponsors want to speak? Otherwise, we can move into debate. Cool. Okay. I'm now going to allow for debate. If you wish to speak on this resolution, just raise your hand in the chat. And I see a message. Can the resolution be posted in the chat? Yes, I can send the link to it right now.
Could I motion to vote?
There has been a motion to vote.
Second.
There's been a second. Okay, great. Is there any dissent? Seeing as there is no dissent, student assembly members, please cast your votes in the chat. And I really appreciate that we're moving through the meeting. Last week's meeting took forever, and I know that was also in the meeting of semifinals. So I do appreciate people recognizing that we're going to be moving through this. Okay, I'm going to close voting in about 10 seconds. And if you're abstaining, feel free to privately message me. And if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that's an abstention. With a vote of 26-0-2, I believe, someone correct me if that vote count is wrong, this resolution passes. Salam and the other co-sponsors, thank you for bringing this resolution to the table and congratulations. Wonderful. We're now going to be moving to the next order of business, which is resolution number 16 in support of the Cornell University Caribbean Students Association's demands. I believe this is co-sponsored by members of the CSA, if you are on this call.
Yeah, we're here.
Hi, okay. thank you for coming to our meeting. You're more than welcome to present your resolution. And I can also send a link in the chat to the resolution. If you want me to screen share, just let me know.
Yeah, I want to screen share, please.
Sure, just a second. Okay, screen sharing now.
Cool, thank you. Everybody can see this, right? Cool. Okay, ready to go.
Hi, everyone. So today, the Caribbean Students Association will present to you the Caribbean experience at Cornell, a broader context, which is Cornell University in New York and the United States in general, the birth of our demands at administration, and even more. So my name is Leonie. I'm a junior in arts and science, the current treasurer of CSA and a co-founder of the organization. I'm going to allow some other members of the exec board to introduce themselves, starting with Aurora.
Hi, hello everybody. My name is Aurora McKenzie. I'm a senior. I am one of the co-founders with Leonie, and I'm the current president of the CSA.
Hi, I am Sydney Brownie. I'm a sophomore in ILR, and I am the secretary of the CSA.
Hello, I'm Solomon. I am a senior this year. I am in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I am the VP of External Affairs.
Okay, so CSA was founded in February of 2019 with 5 members, but now we have over 200 members, which has expanded the executive board as well to 11, as you can see their beautiful faces here. So we are committed to providing an open and safe space for the entire Cornell community, but specifically Caribbean students to embrace their culture and history. For Cornell, we believe to be an all-rounded experience. We want to create a community of support as we go through our journey here together. We are committed to both all aspects of the motto, any person, any study, which Cornell has, as we bring the learning experience outside of the classroom. So in our presentation today, we'll be speaking about the definition of the Caribbean, being Caribbean at Cornell and in a broader context, the complexity and the contribution that Caribbean people have to the community and the birth of our demands. And then if we have time, we'll have a Q&A at the end.
Okay, so just first a comment on the perception of the Caribbean. So as I'm sure that all of you have seen on basic maps or shirts or what have you. The Caribbean is mainly just seen as Cuba, Haiti, and Jamaica, what have you. But in reality, those images are false and really just convey the lack of representation of the Caribbean, first South and Central America are often not on any maps of the Caribbean. And a lot of the smaller countries either just aren't on the maps at all, or are there but don't have their names by them. And even better maps of the Caribbean, which does show South and Central America, don't have many of the names of the smaller countries. And this lack of representation often extends to teachings about our culture, which just conveys the extensive need of representation for all countries under the diaspora.
So yes, as Sydney was highlighting, is that we need to be a bit more inclusive of what we understand the Caribbean to be. Here at CSA, we like to think of the Caribbean as a product of the labor experience. It's a mixing pot of many histories and many global histories. The last map really reflects our motto of Caribbean, divided by water, united by culture. And this kind of highlights that there is no one meaning to be being Caribbean, and that we all have our own different stories. On CSA, we have students that represent over 25 countries internationally. We have indigenous students, first gen, and student athletes, entrepreneurs, what have you. We have students from every continent except Antarctica, we like to say, and we represent almost 50 different languages and through the Caribbean. For me, being Caribbean, I can't even speak right now, I'm sorry. I'm a bit nervous. Sorry. So we've talked to people on campus and we've kind of surveyed to understand what it means to be Caribbean on campus. And at times it can feel a bit isolating at times. You may feel an limbo effect. Sometimes your friends don't necessarily understand your personal experience, whether you're an international student or whether you are growing up in the States and trying to connect back to your Caribbean roots. Often students have reflected sentiments of dispelling stereotypes about their cultures or proving what it isn't or is, and having to sift through things like that and discussions and difficulties like that. But the most important thing is to remember that no one person's story can be summed up. There is a lot of different complex stories within the Caribbean. For me, being Caribbean in the States, I like to see it as like learning about politics. That's my most important thing. I love politics. And so learning about like resistance efforts, if we center discussions around maybe Haiti, for example, what can we learn about a global history that may not be told and might be left out in our textbooks?
And I'd speak about how being Caribbean has affected me. I'm at Cornell and the broader context of the United States. So I was born and raised in Kingston, Jamaica. So my experience has encompassed learning, but also educating and unifying the people around me. As a part of my own personal journey and growth, I found it most valuable to be eager to learn from each other, to be proud of my origins, and to respect other people's experiences. So this may be just because I'm a minority at Cornell in many different ways. I'm international, I'm a Black woman, I'm a first gen student. So that may have been instinctive for me. However, this is not true for everyone. I have been able to tap into learning beyond the academic river at Cornell. And as mentioned before, it has been extremely difficult to ensure that the complexity of my identity is not overlooked in the classroom. So, you know, as Solomon said, we have many different differences, but also similarities that can bring us together. And we must also respect each other. And, you know, that is basically the pillar of our plea. We just want to be represented for Cornell to re-educate and to recognize us on this campus.
So just a few statistics to just show the extent of what we're asking for. I am so sorry, my camera's going crazy. Okay, is that approximately 15% of Guyanese people live in NYC alone. And that just conveys how the extent of Caribbean people who are in this country, and even within the Guyanese people, there exists several cultures of East Indian, African, and indigenous people. So even within one culture, there can exist several other cultures in that respect. And then the next statistic that I wanted to share is in the state by itself. As you guys can read on this slide, the amount of residents in NYC alone is great, as well as the part of the immigrant population in the city, and given the obligation of Cornell to have students from the state at their college, it really just shows the amount of people on campus who are from the Caribbean who really at the moment aren't being properly represented on campus. And as somebody who was born in this country, but my culture is not from here, I've really experienced no representation of my culture here, even within other avenues in the school. So I think that it's important that with the amount of people in here from the Caribbean, that it's important that we can see part of ourselves and our culture within what is being taught here.
Exactly, thank you. So we began writing those demands like this summer. It's coming from a whole bunch of like people thinking, but the main ones are me, Leonie, and Matthew Arthur, who was our director of external affairs. And we constantly came back to the main reasons why we did something like this. We want to amplify the student voice. We really want to like stop academic segregation based on language, because as Solomon said, there's only 50 languages spoken within the Caribbean. And we really want to focus on the history and culture of the Caribbean, considering the contributions of our people are worldwide. They're global, all over the place. And in all honesty, when it comes to Cornell's campus, we are a decentralized community based on where we came from, our nationalities, our skin tones, et cetera. So like we're all over the place. But we also want to increase Cornell's cultural competence for the university as a whole, but also the individual students. And that comes with more accessibility education about the Caribbean and all the aspects of the university that can fall under. We also want to support our international students in their academic path as they get here to Cornell, and also to not erase the population of people within the Caribbean that are not of African or European descent at all, and with that connected diaspora. So with the help of our faculty advisor, Dr. Carol Boyce Davies, we focus on academic diversity opportunity, demographic information that would allow us for a better sense of community and belonging for Cornell students, and accessibility to education about the Caribbean and how it intersects across so many different university departments.
And as Aurora was highlighting through the demands, we've gained a little bit of support through the university so far. That's where we've gotten most of our traction, and today we're calling on for SA to help broaden that. We've gained support from like professors like Dr. Golf and Boyce Davies, as well as organizations on campus. One of the biggest things is we are starting to gain support from other universities and other Caribbean student associations such as Brandeis, Columbia, and Brown. And so the big goal now is to mainly work on the demands as well as continue that support.
All right, so are there any other? We're all done now.
Amazing. Thank you all so much for being here and for that wonderful presentation. And also thank you for bringing your resolution to the student assembly. Great. Okay, so I'm going to now open the floor for any questions or comments for the co-sponsors. Feel free to raise your hand in the Zoom chat if you have something to say.
Could I motion to vote?
Second. I do see one hand from a community member. Would you like to retract your motion just so we can let the community member speak?
Sure, no problem.
Okay. Wait, sorry, okay. I was asking Morgan to retract her motion to vote so that you could speak if you wanted to, Dakota. So do you still want to speak?
Yes, I just had a quick comment.
Okay, and then Morgan, are you withdrawing your motion really quickly so Dakota can speak? Morgan was the one to make the motion to vote, right?
Yes, I will withdraw.
Okay, you can motion right after Dakota's finished, seeing as we have no one else on the speakers list. Dakota, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Just really quick, I wanted to thank y'all for the presentation. It was very well said. And I really hope it works out for y'all. Best on your endeavors.
Okay, motion to vote.
Thank you. Is there a second? There's been a second. Great, perfect. So many seconds. SA members, please cast your votes in the chat. I'm going to close voting in 10 seconds. And if you're not going to vote, then I'm going to assume that's an abstention. Okay, we are still waiting on a few essay votes. Let's see, perfect, I see them coming in. Okay, wonderful. Thank you all so much for voting so promptly. With a vote of 27-0-1, I believe, this resolution passes. Congratulations, seriously, to the CSA. Thank you so much for presenting. This resolution is now formally passed. Awesome. Okay. Thank you to the Student Assembly for voting for the resolution. Alrighty, we'll be continuing on with our agenda items. The next thing on our agenda is Resolution 17, Reduction of Convocation Committee Student Activity Fee Allocation. I do know there was some communication on whether or not this resolution would still be brought. Uche, as a co-sponsor, would you like to provide some insight on whether or not we'll be discussing this today?
Yeah, so we're not going to be discussing this today because we're still in conversation with relevant parties. So we're going to be table. I'm going to ask everyone to table this until next week.
Great. Is that a formal motion to table?
Yep. Motion to table.
Is there a second?
Second.
Great. Okay. SA members, please vote to clarify. This means we're motioning to table this resolution until next week. This means that we will not discuss it today, but we will discuss it next week and then vote on it next week. SA members, please cast your votes in the next 10 seconds. Still see if, and if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that's an abstention. And there's no reason you should all be abstaining unless you have a conflict of interest, which I don't believe you all do. But regardless, the vote is now 26-0-2. Great, this resolution has been tabled. Continuing on to the final item on our agenda, resolution number 18, in recognition and appreciation of Cornell employees and staff. This is co-sponsored. I think the two co-sponsors are here as well, Lucas and Uche, if either of you want to say a few words about this resolution.
I can start, I guess. That's okay, Kat. And so this resolution, it's again, I guess, thanking the Cornell employees and staff that have continued to work tirelessly throughout the pandemic. Kind of stems from the employee assembly considered a resolution thanking us as students, and we think it's really important to recognize them as well, considering that all they've put in, and especially, you know, recognizing right now that employees and staff is kind of where we're seeing cases on the rise. And I think that's, you know, partially because they're continuing to make sure that they keep on going with their everyday lives to make sure the university was open for us. And, you know, we really do appreciate that effort. So that's why we wanted to put this and make sure that as students, we officially recognized it.
Great. Thank you so much, Lucas. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? We can move into debate right now.
Motion to vote.
Seeing as there has been a motion to vote and no one on the speaker's list and there has been a second, great. SA members, please cast your votes in the chat. Forgive me, I misspoke. We do have two more items on the agenda for today still. I forgot about Evan's resolutions. Okay. SA members, please cast your votes in the next 10 seconds. Still waiting for a few votes, 5 more seconds. And if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that's an abstention. So the vote is, as it is currently, 26 to 27. Okay, votes are still coming in. Okay, so everyone finished voting. Vote is now 27 to 0 to 1. Thank you all for voting. Great, so we're done with our previous resolution. We're going to move into the next two resolutions, which are co-sponsored by Evan. Representative Moy, the floor is yours to present your resolutions. And the links were sent in the chat earlier if people want to preview them.
Yeah, I'm going to start with the resolution to maintain the University Assembly's jurisdiction over the Code of Conduct. And Logan, if you want to start, because she is also a co-sponsor.
Kat, is it okay for me to talk on the floor?
Yeah, I think that was Evans yielding his floor to you, so go for it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was recognized. Thank you. Okay, so everyone, this resolution is something that I brought before the University Assembly this past Tuesday. It is based on a longstanding history of the Campus Code of Conduct. Before the 1970s, the Campus Code of Conduct was with the faculty, a committee on student affairs, and that originally included two undergraduate students as voting members. And as time has gone on, the Henderson Law, which is a public law, asks that the Board of Trustees of each college in New York State adopts regulations for the maintenance of public order. And so the Board of Trustees acted with strong community support and delegated the University Senate, which then became the University Assembly later on, jurisdiction over the Campus Code of Conduct. And our charter has held that we examine standards of conduct, and we have one calendar month to review and respond to proposed changes of policies. And how that's usually been done is through the Campus Code of Conduct's, the CJC, which is the Codes and Judicial Committee, which was a committee created to handle changes to the Campus Code of Conduct. And so amendments would come from the CJC and then go back to the University Assembly and then go to the President and the Board of Trustees for approval. And so we've been dealing with changes, a whole revamp to the code for the past 2+ years now. And we've finally gotten somewhere where I think that the code is definitely workable. However, jurisdiction is a huge issue that I think needs to be discussed. And I think especially with the student assembly, and I'll be talking to the GPSA on Monday as well. I am asking that the student assembly consider adopting this resolution. The current draft that is from the university council is removing jurisdiction from the university assembly and providing the jurisdiction in the hands of the vice president of student and campus life. I think I did say that right the first time. So if I didn't, I'm sorry, everyone. And I feel that in the spirit of shared governance, since the Office of the Judicial Administrator reports directly to that position and the University Assembly has always been a unbiased group filled with all of the constituent parties, that it is pertinent that it remains with us, that prevents bias, ensures the code has full buy-in from all of the university stakeholders. And I also paid a lot of attention at CJC meetings and listened to something that Kat said, which is that the University Assembly and CJC should be also
asked. 153 people in a meeting.
Go ahead, Logan. I think they were accidentally unmuted.
Okay. Thanks, Kat. So Kat proposed that the Student Assembly and the GPSA have more of a role than they already have when considering changes to the Campus Code of Conduct. And so I spent the past couple of weeks trying to figure out how that could work. And I purposefully left it blank and just wrote consultation in this document because I want the Student Assembly's input. The way that I think that it could work is for the Codes and Judicial Committee to remain an unbiased party, and for, with each amendment, the Student Assembly and the GPSA to submit comments or resolutions in whatever way they wish and have that separate from the already individual voting members that they have on both the CJC and the UA. And I think that that maintains really strong power for the students and keeps the UA really as an unbiased group. The UA has pretty much always been that. And I think when it comes to the code, I foresee more of like a tiebreaker role where the students can instead come and like present their ideas, but not in a way where we're saying that we listen, but in a way that that information is actually taken and accepted and used to create new amendments. And so I am really grateful to have the floor, and I'm sorry that this is the first time I've attended a SA meeting. I've tried not to attend any of the constituent meetings and just read the minutes out of respect because I talk to all of your leaders, and but great job with everything you guys have done this year, and I'm really happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you so much, Logan, for being here. Okay, so just to clarify, this is on both, that was to preface both resolutions, or are we still only on the first resolution?
Just the first one.
Just the first one, okay, thank you. So now we're in discussion on the first resolution that was sent, which I believe is maintaining UA jurisdiction over the code of conduct. We have a speakers list, so I will not recognize Mariah Adege. The floor is yours.
Yeah, so I think I'm a little bit confused here. So currently CJC reviews the code, and if Lombardi's office were to hold this, like who would be making those revisions? I guess I'm just like a little bit confused. So like the jurisdiction now belongs to who exactly?
Yeah, so the jurisdiction currently belongs to the CJC for the most part. It's the University Assembly as a whole. But if this resolution passes, it would move to the Office of Student Campus Life.
Okay, and so what
so,
does that...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Logan? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know how... Kat, do I raise my hand to be recognized with questions? Okay.
Good question, Logan. And thank you, thank you for asking about procedure. So because you are a co-sponsor, you will be allowed to respond to any question that an SA member is asking of you. Feel free to answer.
Yeah, so thank you for your question. That's something that I've been talking to the University Council about, and I still don't have a clear answer. All I have is that Ryan Lombardi would be in consultation with the GPSA and the Student Assembly, but I don't have an answer yet for what that means. I asked for a definition for consultation and I haven't gotten one yet. I am happy to pull up the latest language that I have regarding this, if you could just bear with me for one moment. sorry for the delay. So currently how it stands is the university council is saying that the vice president for student and campus life, in consultation with the elected assemblies of the university, so it would be all of the assemblies, where my draft is saying it would stay within the CJC and the UA where it currently is, but with consultation from the GPSA and the student assembly, since this is becoming a student code. The proposal is that the vice president of student and campus life or their designee would chair a standing code and procedures review committee. And that would include representatives from the student assembly and the graduate student and professional assembly to provide advisory input on proposed amendments to either the code or the procedures. Further, any assembly of the university, the student assembly, GPSA, faculty senate, or employee assembly may propose amendments to the code, and that the VPSCL shall publicly post any proposed changes to the code prior to the adoption. So I asked University Council Wessel what advisory input means, and I don't have an answer yet. So I have no idea. And that's why I left it blank in my resolution, because I wanna know how the student assembly and then also the GPSA would want to consult with the university assembly if they felt that it should stay with the university assembly. But I unfortunately can't answer right now what the vice president of student and campus life would actually do when it comes to the committee, because it just says advisory input and it doesn't say anything about a vote or anything like that. It's really confusing to me.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you for answering, Logan. And thank you for your question, Mariah. Next on the speakers list, we have Representative Reyne.
Hey, Logan. I think you kind of answered my questions, but basically how it works now with CJC is you have representatives from faculty, you have representatives from SA, you have representatives essentially from across campus who all have voting power in the amendments being made to the code of conduct. That's current situation, right? So this change would essentially put all final decisions with VPSCL, and who, if they felt like it, would listen to the students and or the grad and professional students, but has no obligation to, because they probably will have no voting power based on the language being used.
Nice to see you, Tomas.
Okay, so that-
We unfortunately have the same understanding of the language, and that's why I pushed this resolution through really quickly. And I'm sorry if there's any like typos or anything, but I am in the middle of finals, but I read that language and got really scared. But yeah, you and I have the same understanding that advisory input isn't defined. So potentially somebody can come to the GPSA or the student assembly and just say, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And you can say, please don't, and make a resolution, and it doesn't necessarily have to be listened to. Right. And until I get any language that says anything opposite to that, that is all an advisory role is. So I'm trying to create a position where we don't have any confusion about who gets to speak and who is actually heard. And also I believe that the university assembly is the most unbiased party that we can leave this with. Like, it's all of the community stakeholders. There's not much to gain. We're all volunteers. And from getting extra input from the SA and the GPSA, which I would really appreciate amendments to this and what that looks like, I think that we're salvaging the student voice and student rights and keeping shared governance. And there's no 100% that the board will listen, but I'm hoping that they will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great, thank you for that answer. Thank you for your question, Tomas. Next on the speakers list, we have UA Rep Bennett Scher. Bennett, the floor is yours.
Hi everyone, I just wanted to underscore the importance of this resolution and put it in sort of a context in which people who haven't necessarily been following this discussion from the beginning might understand. So the way that it's, I know that there's been a lot of talk about the evidentiary standard. There's been a lot of debate about that, and people were very unhappy when the proposed evidentiary standard was preponderance for all JA cases. So under the way that this that the code is currently written, under the way that the new code is currently written, there is theoretically nothing stopping VP Lombardi from essentially saying, I want preponderance of evidence for all JA cases. I don't care what the student assemblies has to say. I don't care what the GPSA has to say. Even if this, even if those two bodies were to vote in favor of a clear and convincing standard, there is nothing in the code as it's currently written to stop VP Lombardi from unilaterally making adjustments to the code of conduct. And that has grave repercussions for all of us as students. So I just think in an effort of preserving student rights, this is a dire resolution that we have to pass.
Okay, thank you, Bennett. Great, so next on the speakers list, we have Representative Smith. Lucas, the floor is yours.
Yes, no, so thank you for bringing the resolution. Definitely appreciate it and the intentions. I think it all makes sense. Certainly seeing the power transferred to the VP SCL doesn't seem quite right. But even still, I guess I'm still a little concerned with the whole idea, right, that of this code revision is making it a very student-centric code. And you know, that's the whole principle here, is that we're kind of eliminating the employees and staff from directly falling underneath it. So, you know, even having the UA, well, it's like unbiased, like, you know, there's not necessarily a need there. I get the unbiased, that's maybe the argument, maybe you can go deeper into that. But I guess with that as well, at the core of this resolution, not much is really changing from where we're at. And so my other concern is that we know the Board of Trustees is like really fed up already with how things went, which, you know, I know we can debate whether that was for good reason, you know, bad reason on the part of the UA, but I'm just concerned that like this change is not really what we need, because like the Board of Trustees isn't going to wink at it, because it's essentially where we're at now and they don't like that. So, you know, whether there could be more, flip the tables and it's just the SA and the GPSA with the power, what that would look like, thoughts on that kind of thing.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your question, Lucas. Logan and Evan as co-sponsors, you guys have time to respond. I'm going to put a time limit, as we normally do during student assembly meetings, 2 minutes per speaker. And if you need time reminders, I can send them in the chat. Just let me know.
Thanks, Kat. And hi, Lucas. Nice to see you. So quickly, just to talk about the faculty involvement and employees, I just thought that since our faculty and employees, I would like to say, want the best for the student community and are a part of the Cornell stakeholders in general, that it just made sense to have other opinions in the room. I am open to discussing other ideas. The main thing I was just looking for is there does need to be one body who does hold the code, and it can't be the GPSA and the student assembly. So I think the UA is a safe haven. And if it goes to the vice president and administration, I just think that there's room for more of an ability for a power grab. And by asking you all to define consultation and do that with me, and by not bringing it to the floor purposefully, it's so that I can understand the best way for students to feel like we're getting the best out of this. And I think that that can be a change once we define consultation. And I'm also going to say that historically, the CJC has really worked mainly on amendments. So this is like the first time that we've done a full code revision. So while the board is frustrated by the full code revision, our amendments have not had the same process. It's been entirely different.
Great. Thank you for your answer, Logan. You used 1 minute, 30 seconds. So that's well within our time. So thank you for following. Cool. We still have some people on the speakers list. I'm now going to recognize Brandon Fortenberry from the Employee Assembly. Brandon, thank you so much for being at our meeting today, by the way. Floor is yours. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Kat. I'm the chair of the CJC committee, and I just wanted to provide some clarification in regards to the amendment process. There's a piece that's really important to understand is the last sentence about the revision states, changes to the code or procedures must be formally adopted by the president with notice to the Board of Trustees. And I think it's important to clarify that that is exactly the process that pertains currently, that amendments have to go through the president and the Board of Trustees. So while there is a shift in providing in the VP of Student and Campus Life and this Codes and Procedure Review Committee, there is still public comment and then a formalized process which must be approved from the President and Board of Trustees, and that the VP of Student and Campus Life cannot make decisions on the code without approval from those bodies as it currently stands.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the insight, Brandon. Great. I'm now going to recognize Representative Reuning. The floor is yours again.
I just wanted to add that I recognize the value of putting it under somewhere like SA or GPSA, but I will say, like, when I was on the CJC briefly, it was really valuable to have input from faculty. You know, like, we can find them annoying sometimes or whatever, but they're brilliant. And they have brilliant insight when doing the, like, when working through the code. And there were things that I didn't understand how they could potentially impact students and faculty that they, you know, explained. And I don't think if it had just been students and even grad students looking at the code, we would have had that insight. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the insight, Tomas. Great. Okay. Seeing as we have no one else on the speakers list, I'm waiting for hands, but if not, as chair, I'd formally see if there is a motion to vote. If not, we can continue also the debate.
Motion to amend. So I have two amendments that I want to add. Within the conclusion, I would need to change Logan Kenny to be the UA representative, not the GPSA representative. That was my bad. And then also to add Morgan Baker, Kayla Butler, Claire Templeman, Valentina Hsu, Raquel Zohar, Kate Santa Cruz, and Dylan Undercott as co-sponsors.
Okay. So those are two separate motions to amend, unless you want to lump them all into. Okay.
Great. Two separate motions.
Okay. So we're going to address the motion about Logan. So there's been a motion to amend to change Logan's title to the UA representative instead. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
There's been a second. Okay, any dissent? Okay, we're already voting. Seeing as there's no dissent, SA members, cast your votes in the chat. I'm also going to try if, okay. There is this thing in Robert's Rules that you can do. It's just called general consent / unanimous consent. It's used for like non-controversial motions. The way it's going to happen is I'll ask like, oh, are there any objections to this motion? And if no one objects, then we're just going to assume that that motion passes. It's just to save time because voting takes forever for some reason. So I'm going to try that the next time we do the amendments. And if you do want to put an objection, just say I object to unanimous like this general unanimous consent, and then we can move into the formal voting like we're doing right now. Okay, SA members, please cast your votes. We're waiting on like 10 more. I'm going to close voting in 10 seconds. And if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that's an abstention. And just to clarify again, this is just to amend Logan's title at the end of the resolution to UA representative rather than the GPSA representative. Okay. Closing voting in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, great. 24-0-3, this resolution, this amendment passes, excuse me. Wonderful. And then now we're going to deal with the second amendment, which is adding co-sponsors. Can you name the co-sponsors again, just so our clerk has them?
Yeah, so Morgan Baker, Kayla Butler, Claire Templeman, Valentina Hsu, Raquel Zohar, Kate Santa Cruz, and Dylan Undercott.
Okay, thank you. So there has been a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Second.
Great. I'm going to now do the whole general unanimous consent thing. Is there any objection to adding these co-sponsors to the resolution? Seeing as there is no objection, this motion to amend passes. Great. Thank you for those amendments. Now, is there a question?
Yeah, sorry, I tried to raise my hand. Could I also be put in the list of co-sponsors, if that's okay?
Evan and Logan, yes.
Yeah, motion to amend to add Andrea to the list of co-sponsors.
Is there a second?
If anybody else wants to be added, let me know.
I need two, please. Thank you.
Include Tomas, or Tomas, was that a hand? Yeah, Tomas, Lucas,
I'd like
anybody. Oh, Mardia as well.
And it would also like to be added as a co-sponsor.
If you want to be a co-sponsor, how about you put your hand up so we can read them out loud all in one? Put your hand up in the next. Oh, that's a lot. Okay, great. Evan, please go ahead and read the names. Say motion. I motion to add these folks.
I motion to amend to add Bennett Scher, Amari Lampert, Merdia Chardo, Mariah Agata, Tomas Renewing, Lucas Zompano, Sono Kapoor, Genevieve Bassa, Lucas Smith, Lucy Contreras, Anuli Onoi, I apologize for butchering the pronunciations, Valentina Valencia, Samuel Zivirek, Andrea Serrano, and Uche Chukwue.
And Noah Watson.
Okay, so I think you combine like some of her names. So it's Valentina Shu and then Valeria Valencia. Just
I'm so sorry. That's my bad.
Great. Thank you all for that. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Great. There's been a second. I'm now going to do the general consent. Does anybody object to this motion? Seeing as there's no objection, this motion to amend passes. Great. Now we all have you as co-sponsors. There's going to be a whole page of you when we present this to the president. Is there a motion to vote? We have someone on the speakers list still. Sorry. Yes, Logan.
Yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting. I was wondering if you all would consider language for what it means to provide input as the SA and GPSA, because I think that's really important. And that's something that's a primary reason that I left it blank, because I didn't want to have anyone speak for you. So if you would consider just a definition for how the GPSA and SA can work with the CJC members and the UA as a whole so that they're adequately heard and represented, because I think this will affect hopefully people for decades to come.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you, Logan. I do appreciate you making a note that we can discuss what consultation exactly means. Do any SA members have any thoughts on what this consultation could look like? This can be like meetings with the UA, meetings with the BBSCL. If anyone has thoughts, feel free to put your hand up and I will recognize you. And it would be nice to be able to formally define what consultation is, so to ensure that the SA is kept in the loop on this. Awesome. I see that we have a hand, two hands. Yay. Okay. I'm now going to recognize Representative Andrea. The floor is yours.
I don't know if this is a thing already, but it would be really nice if just like members of the community were able to sit in these meetings, provide input that way. And that way we could also maybe like hear to what is being said in the actual meetings. I think that'd be really helpful.
Awesome. Thank you for that suggestion. Next, I'm going to recognize Representative Adege. Moriah, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I was gonna say if CJC could provide the essay with like updates, I guess like the minutes are always available anyways, but I guess consultation could maybe be in the form of like maybe a more formal update than just like the minutes being available. So whether that's like CJC members like coming to essay meetings, like maybe even like once or twice a semester at most, just to, like give updates on like what the code process is at and like soliciting input.
Awesome. Thank you, Mariah. Logan, as a co-sponsor, would you like to respond to that really quickly?
Yeah, I would love to. I was wondering if you would all be open to, as soon as an amendment comes through, whether it's from the president's office or the UA, having it immediately go to the student assembly and the GPSA and asking for comments and resolutions, either one within a certain period of time. And then just, of course, all meetings are open and adding whoever wants to be added to the listserv. I think that might be a positive way. Thank you for the thumbs up.
Awesome. Great, thank you for those suggestions, everyone. We did have a hand from Bennett, but I think you put your hand down. Do you still want to speak?
I was gonna propose.
You cut out, but I think you were saying I was gonna propose the same thing.
Yeah, I was gonna propose the same thing that Logan just brought up.
Great, Awesome. Thank you all. Do we have any? Oh, Logan, is your hand up again?
Yeah. Sorry, Kat. I was just going to say before voting, I'm really like happy if somebody wants to amend the current motion on the floor to add that definition so that it's codified in the document. I don't want it just to be something that we discuss in the minutes, so that it's something that the university assembly and the president knows was discussed and agreed upon by the SI.
Thank you. So Tomas,
motion to amend to define consultation as periodical formal updates from the university assembly to the student assembly. And what was the other thing that was said?
And the GPSA, and as soon as amendments or changes come through, for them immediately to go to those bodies.
And that.
thank you for that motion. I put the language, I think you said, in the chat, just so people can be clear on this. Let me know if this is not exactly what you're thinking, but we do have a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Second.
Awesome. Okay, there's been a second. So I'm going to ask, I asked for a vote for this as people are already voting. SI members, please cast your votes in the chat. I don't think we should do a general consent on this because it is a pretty important vote. And just to clarify what you're voting on, if you're voting yes, this means you approve of the motion to amend the definition of consultation. To me, what it means in the chat. Is there another hand or? Oh, let me put this updated language from Tomas in the chat for everyone to see. Thank you so much for typing it all out. There we go. Okay, this is the formal language. SI members, take a look and then please cast your votes as soon as possible. We're gonna close voting in 10 seconds. If you're not voting, I'm gonna assume that's an abstention. So please cast your votes as soon as possible. Okay, 5 more seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, with a vote of 24-0-3, that amendment passes. Okay, I see another hand from Logan. As a co-sponsor, I'll recognize you multiple times.
I'm so sorry, Kat. Tomas, this might be asking you to potentially just amend a little bit further, but to hold the UA and CJC accountable, that immediately go to the bodies, and that the CJC and UA, I don't know how to word it, but accept these and consider them when making decisions. I want to make sure that we don't have just the situation where you send us information. I want it to be like that we have to consider it when making our vote. Does that make sense?
Feel free to take some time to type up that specific language. Don't rush it. I see a hand from Andrea. Representative, the floor is yours, Andrea, if you have another question before we do the motion.
Put this, but it's a question to Logan and about the thing that I said of sitting in the UA, the meetings that they hold. Is that a thing? Like, can you actually do that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat your question? I don't know why, but you cut out for me.
Yeah, sorry. Could we sit in the meeting from the university assembly?
Yes. So since we're over Zoom right now, we have like some more like technical problems. So you have to email the office of the assemblies for the Zoom link, but all of them are open to the public. And our next one is Tuesday at 4:30.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Andrea.
Thank you.
For your answer, Logan. I'm going to pause for a quick second before we do the motion to amend, as chair, I formally approve of a motion to extend the meeting by about 15 minutes if someone wants to make that motion.
Motion to extend by 15 minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you all. Is there any objection to this? And if, cool, that passes. We don't have to vote on that because it was the general consent thing. Great. I have updated language from Tomas again on the amendment to be considered. Let me put in the chat. Here we go. Tomas, would you like to read it out loud? Or are you good? Sorry.
It's a consultation as periodical formal updates from the UA to the SA and GPSA, as well as all amendments under consideration being immediately sent to these bodies, whose recommendations and concerns will be seriously considered by the CJC.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you for that language. So that language has been proposed. Is that an official motion to amend?
Motion to amend.
Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. I'm going to do the general consent again. Is there any objection to this amendment? Okay. Seeing as there is no objection, this amendment passes. For SA members, if you can't stay past 6:30, it's okay. We will excuse your absence because I know that people are busy. So feel free to head out at 6:30 if you have to. As long as we don't dip below quorum, we'll be okay. Perfect. Okay. Are there any more amendments that the co-sponsors would like to be considered?
Motion to vote.
Awesome. So there is a motion to vote. Is there a second?
Second.
Alrighty, SA members, please cast your votes in the chat. And I'm going to close voting in 15 seconds. Cast your votes in the next 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Alrighty. And if you're not voting, I'm assuming that's an abstention. So this passes with a vote of 24-0-3. Okay, so that was the first resolution, correct? And we have another one? Yes, no?
Yes, there is.
Alrighty. Would you guys like to present your second resolution?
I'm the only co-sponsor on this one, but yes, I will. Yeah, so this resolution proposes, this resolution is very short, and essentially it just, currently the final draft of the proposed changes, the one that the Board of Trustees is going to be voting on, is not public information. We cannot find a copy of this. Certain bodies do have it, but it's not public information. The Assembly doesn't have it. So this resolution formally requests this final version to be given to us. And then it also asks the Board of Trustees to delay the vote indefinitely in order to give us time to comment on these changes. It's a very simple resolution.
Okay, great. Thank you, Evan, for this resolution. Interesting. So, okay, just a second. I am getting a couple private messages that people have to leave. Again, if you have to leave, that's totally okay. If you want a proxy vote and you have been present for these discussions, message me privately. Sorry, can you stop screen sharing, Evan, so I can see
your hands? Sorry about that.
No worries. Alrighty. Logan, you privately messaged me something. I'm going to recognize you so you can say what you messaged me.
Yeah, so I just wanted to let everyone know that the reason that the current version of the code is out is because there was a huge misunderstanding, and the code had to be attached to once it was sent out to the UA and the CJC, and I sent it to all the constituent leaders. One of us had to attach it to our minutes, and I didn't know that until today. So I thought that the code has been public in its most current draft, and it's not. So I just wanted to say that and also apologize for that because I had no clue. I don't know if Brandon today at the CJC meeting, if it was included in the minutes, but if it was, then it will be public. If not, I think that potentially we could ask here for it to be public also, Kat, since you're a member of the UA and Uche as well. But I just wanted to say that I'm sorry that the current version is not out. I didn't realize until today, and I'm so sorry.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing, Logan. I also didn't realize it wasn't public. I had thought it was on the website, but evidently not. Okay. Brandon, thank you for being here. I know you just had CJC earlier this evening. Would you like to address Logan's question? And I'm formally recognizing you if you do.
Yeah, we had a light turnout, so we didn't have a quorum. I sent it out in an email with the meeting minutes. I'm not sure if that will qualify, but as Logan said, Kat, you have a copy of them. If you would like to include it in the meetings here, that's totally acceptable as well.
Sure. And this would just be the most recent copy that was sent today from you, right?
Yeah, it was in the CJC email that I sent out today. Those two, yes. There's two drafts, the code and the procedure.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, so I will now open the speakers list. If there's any questions or debate, put your hand up. And again, if you want to proxy vote, can you message me privately what your proxy vote is? I think according to the new rules, the chair reads everyone's proxy vote. So if you're having someone else proxy for you, just tell them to message me. Okay. Are there any hands?
By the way, motion to amend to add more co-sponsors. If you want to be a co-sponsor, first of all, raise your hand in the chat. But then currently, the amendment is to add Morgan Baker, Kayla Butler, Claire Templeman, Valentina Shu, Raquel Zohar, Kate Santa Cruz, and Dylan Undercott again as co-sponsors. Okay.
Perfect. Is there a second to that? Motion to amend?
Second.
All right, there's been a second. Is there any objection?
Wait, does that list also include the people who have their hands up?
Oh, I can include them now. So also include, if we withdraw the second, I would also like to include Amari Lamport, Bennett Scher, Annette Gleiberman, Andrea Serrano, Sreuning, Valeria Valencia, Lucas Smith.
Okay, great. Is there a second to that motion to amend?
Second.
All righty.
I was objection? Also on that list too, in the amendment.
Okay.
As a co-sponsor.
Thank you, Sam. We're gonna add Sam as a, Samuel Zverev as a co-sponsor of this resolution. There was a second. Is there any objection? Great, this motion to amend passes. I love general consent, it's very easy. Okay, may I ask a quick question as chair? This is not entering debate, I just have a question. So the final clause says the board trustee vote will be delayed indefinitely until all bodies impacted have been able to process. And I know the board trustees has a special meeting on December 10th that they specifically scheduled to discuss the code because they've been waiting to be able to discuss it for I think the past three to four years. And it kept being delayed. Do the co-sponsor, Evan as co-sponsor, do you have an idea of what this indefinitely means? Like what if it takes forever to reach all the constituencies?
Currently, if we don't have a final copy of what the Board of Trustees have voted on, I do not believe the Board of Trustees should be able to vote without allowing us time to process and review the changes made. If we don't know what they're voting on, we can't fully comment on it. So hopefully the time it takes will be short, but just enough time in order to do so. Because apparently we know, like I might not know the exact amount of time, but we know right now that we don't have enough time.
Sure, so to clarify, if we do pass this and I can share the code in the minutes from today and it's made public for the next week, because the next meeting of the board trustees is within the next week on the 10th, do you think that week would be enough time if we were able to make it public today?
I would assume not. Would be delayed past the current vote.
Okay, just curious. Are there any hands on the speakers list to debate? There is a hand from Representative Gleiberman. Floor is yours, Annie.
Could we potentially, I mean, I don't know how important the December 8th or 10th date is, but if that was really important, could we possibly have an impromptu SE meeting sometime this weekend where we can like address the code?
I would be in favor of that, but I'm not sure. I feel like that's more of an e-board decision. I don't really know how the jurisdiction works with this.
Yeah. VP Watson, as chair of our executive board committee, would you like to address this?
Yeah, definitely. Annie, you can reach out to me and we can set up a time to schedule an informal meeting for all SA members.
Alrighty, great.
But also, I don't know, I would also hear from the co-sponsors, like if that's urgent, like does this have to get done by December 8th?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
No, never mind.
Okay. we do have another hand on the speakers list. UI Rep Scher, the floor is yours.
Hi,
So I just wanted to propose potentially allowing for the trustees to have this meeting after the first meeting of next semester, because equally important as to the SA getting access to the code is the general student body getting access to and being able to comment on this revised code. And that can only happen, I know we're in the middle of finals, we have a lot of things to do. I don't think 1 week is going to be enough to get as much student input as this adequately deserves. So I'm going to propose potentially allowing this, and I can't motion for anything as ex officio, but I'm going to put forward the idea of allowing for the language to include a meeting at the beginning of next semester to allow for students to have break to go in and comment on the code.
Awesome. Thank you, Bennett, for that insight. Is there an SA member, an SA voting member, who would like to make that motion? Okay, Evan, yes. Please state your motion.
Motion to amend the indefinite delay clause to include a meeting at the beginning of next semester in order to give representatives time to comment. I can write out the more precise language in the chat.
Sure, that'd be helpful, thank you. And please just send the precise language to me and I can submit it to everyone. Alrighty, any other people on the speakers list, if you want to speak, put your hand up.
Motion to vote.
There has been, oh, wait, sorry. Make we're gonna do the motion to, sorry, do you withdraw your motion?
Yeah, I withdraw my motion.
Sorry, I was asking Mariah, because she had motion to vote and we were still on your motion to amend to add language about the next meeting next semester.
Oh, wait, sorry, yeah.
I said, do you want to highlight that this code has been open for public comment for like the past several months? So yeah, there, that was on the website. Okay.
Well, we've also gotten emails about it.
Yes.
Oh, wait. If there's a question, my AirPods lost power for a second, so I did not hear it. So if you could repeat the question.
Oh, it was more so just a comment that like we've received emails, like all Cornells, I mean, at least I got an email saying that the code is up for revision and that there's public comment available on the UA website. So I think students should, or at least could have seen this at some point.
Yes, thank you, Mariah.
I didn't actually click on any links in the email, so I don't know if anything was actually up on the website, but I did get the email.
I definitely saw those emails coming in as well. Just to clarify, we're still on the motion to amend, Evan, the language about adding the meeting. Do you want to type it? If not, we can just move forward with the vote. I'll give you some time if you do want to type it, though.
I do want to type it now.
Okay. So right now, Evan is typing his amendment out. We're still on the motion to amend, just waiting for the formal language.
Then I also saw that Logan had a comment to make in regard to the fact that it's been available for comment for a while. So I yield time to her.
Sure. Can you send your language to me and then I can put in the chat for everyone?
I put it in the Zoom. Think I sent it to you over Zoom.
Let me see. Sorry, I think I might have missed it. Okay. Okay, sorry, I see the language now. Okay, so I put the language in the chat. Logan, I will recognize your point once we finish voting on this. This is going to be added, I assume, to line 25 through 27 of this resolution. So this is a motion to amend between lines 25 and 27, delay until the next meeting in the spring semester, once the constituents and organizations have had time to review them. So there's been a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a second. I'm going to do the general consent thing. Is there any objections? Seeing as there's no objection to this amendment does pass. Okay, Logan, you had your hand up. I'll recognize you briefly.
Thanks, Kat. Yeah, just really quickly, Mariah, thank you for your point about the email. I do want to stress, though, that I had to spend a lot of time and effort just to get that email out and that there was not going to be any email. So I think it's important to note that it's been really hard to get word of mouth and public comment. And that's why it took longer than when it was initially posted. And so I'm sorry about that also, but some things take time. And we were able to get the code on the front page of cornell.edu, and the Office of the Assemblies has been super helpful in updating everything. But that email to the whole campus was a little bit hard to get at first.
Awesome. Thank you, Logan. Great. So the time is 6:44. The meeting officially ends in like 1 minute. do we have a motion to vote on this resolution?
Motion to vote.
Is there a second? Okay. SA members cast your perfect. There's been a second. SA members cast your votes in the chat now before 6:45 because we're adjoining at that time.
Well, actually, Kat, I had a motion to make.
Can I motion to extend the meeting?
I just wanted to get maybe people's input because I just wanted to see, since there are still like 70 or so people on the call, I wanted to see if we could do, I think it's called a motion to consider informally police disarmament, since I figured a lot of people here are probably here to talk about that or wanted to talk about that at some point. Just to give a couple people time to talk, but like also it's 6:45, so if people want to go, that's fine. I just wanted to recognize that there are still a lot of community members here who maybe wanted to talk.
For sure. Would anyone want to make a motion to extend for 5 minutes? I have just a piece to say.
Motion to extend for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Is there a second? Is there any objection? Seeing as there is no objection, also SA members keep voting because we're still voting on the resolution and not everyone has voted. Mariah, I definitely agree we should discuss police disarmament at some point. I don't think today is the right time because we are over time, but I did talk to Gina this morning. I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you. I did talk to Gina about setting up a town hall where everyone will like have prior notice to be able to speak on this issue. And we are looking into dates right now, and we're like trying to figure out dates right now because things are complicated with like recall stuff. But would a town hall happening soon work?
Yeah. I mean, it's close to the end of the semester. So like ideally a town hall would happen like this weekend or like this, like within the next week, because it's already the third. We're going to start soon. I think a town hall happening would be great. And I'd love to be CC'd on those emails if possible.
For sure. Of course. Thank you so much. Again, to our community members, thank you like very much for being here. Okay. I'm calling the vote. It's 18-0-1. And if you didn't vote, I'm assuming that's an abstention. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Four abstentions. I guess we lost. We had proxy votes. Let me count the proxy votes. Raquel? Yes.
And can I just message you the proxy?
Yeah. Please message me the proxy. I got a ton of them earlier, but then they got lost in the chat.
Was this the motion to extend or vote on the resolution?
This is the motion to vote on the resolution. We already did the motion to extend. Yes. 1, 2, 3.
Wait, there was never a motion to extend 5 minutes?
Yeah, we already did that. I did the like general. Yeah. So technically we have until 6:50, right? Okay, great. I'm getting the proxy votes right now. I think we got 3 proxy votes in favor, so that makes the vote count. 22-0-3. Okay, so that resolution passes. Thank you, Evan and Logan, for bringing these resolutions to the floor. Seeing as there are no more things on the agenda, is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second? All right, everyone say aye if you want to adjourn.
Aye.
Yeah, great to hear from you. All right, meeting up is officially adjourned. Have a great weekend, y'all. Thanks so much for being here.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.